"From the Morningwood?" Toby said.
"Yep, that's the place."
They said they couldn't get cheese and took all of ours. The gnome chuckled.
"You passed through and had to pay the toll, eh? Well, they can't get the kinds we make. Just squirrel cheese and moose cheese and whatnot. And they don't make a lot of it. Have you ever tried to milk a moose? It's not quite as dangerous as walking near the Titan toothpicks drenched in raspberry vinaigrette, but it's close."
"Hey," Gustav said. "You said you had kids. They have any old shoes they've outgrown?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
The fairy gnome asked, eyes narrowed in suspicion.
"Well, I'll take them all off your hands and give your wee gnomelets a goat back ride in exchange."
The deal was struck, and Gustav was able to moan in gourmet delight for the remainder of the journey, while the rest of the party had to eat whatever sad dry breads Lord Toby could conjure each night. The only basic supplies the border town of Petrel was willing to sell them was water and wine, reserving all else against the day Olfactory came to raid their stores. The goat couldn't help snickering, a greasy gnome booty tender on his tongue as he watched the silly human struggle to swallow the first night's stale pita rounds. Even Argabella's sensitive snoot couldn't find a sunchoke to spare in Olfactory's vegetable-stripped territory. They were anxious to reach the next province, if only to find some sort of roughage besides Toby's almost bread. The village of Malefic Beach, or more properly, the burgeoning hamlet, since it lacked a church, was larger than any the goat had ever seen. There was more than one street, to begin with, and each one of them was in dire need of the attentions of a diligent poo-boy like Worstley. Gustav stuck close to Fia so that no one got any ideas about goat stew. He couldn't be sure if the eyes directed at them were lusting after Fia's flesh or his, since it was significantly warmer in the south than in Borix, and she had unfastened her cloak. The fairy gnome had been quite accurate in his description. They really couldn't miss Grinda's place. This was no witch's hovel, but a grand palace, nestled on a fine stretch of white sand beach, towering over everything else in the hamlet and visible from miles away. An edifice of such brave architectural braggadocio that it caused Poltro to breathe "core" in a tone of wonder.
"Yes, well, it's very nice for what it is, but it doesn't have shrubbery like mine, does it?"
Lord Toby said, his hands and fists and shedding magical crumbs.
"And I think my tower is taller." "What is it with wizards and the size of their towers?" Fia muttered.
"Right,"
Argabella giggled.
"What are they overcompensating for?"
The fairy gnome's sealed letter granted them immediate entrance through the gates, and they were ushered through Grinda's castle by an elderly halfling butler who introduced himself as Milieu Goobersnooch of the Cass Cooper Goobersnooches. He walked slowly enough to allow them time to gawp at the interior. Both Argabella and Fia pointed to a particular tapestry at the same time and said,
"I've seen that before,"
because they had.
"Where?"
Gustav asked. The tapestries depicted unicorns graphically disemboweling young squires, much to the delight of some smiling maidens. Presumably the maidens thought the squires deserved their fates, so they must have been naughty squires indeed. Although he wasn't generally a fan of art, Gustav resolved to delve further into the mysteries of unicorn justice, based on this stunning tableau. The rabbit woman answered,
"There's one just like it in the bedchamber of the sleeping Lady Hark of Rita."
"It is probably very similar, but not exactly like this one,"
the butler said with a sniff.
"This is an original Michelangelo from his blue period. You have most likely seen another piece from the same series." "But I don't see any blue,"
Fia observed.
"Michelangelo was depressed, for he had prophesied his own death and was plagued by recurring nightmares of being slain by unicorns."
He produced these magnificent tapestries during that time, and art historians have labelled it his Blue Period.
Oh, that's very sadful,
Argabella said.
Did he actually die of unicorns?
No, he choked to death on an olive in his cocktail glass. Michelangelo is a fantastic artist, no doubt, but absolute rubbish as a prophet.
The butler paused before a door and coughed politely. Behind the castle, Milieu warned them, shielded from public view, was the Garden of Pellish Delights. Famous or infamous, depending on one's view of carnality.
We will need to walk through it to get to my Lady Grinna. So avert your eyes if you are scandalized by naughty bits.
Gustav wasn't scandalized by such things. He'd seen all manner of creatures doing their business in the barnyard. And thus, the moaning and writhing of the assorted beings on the benches and in the baths and acrobatically hanging from tree branches didn't interest him. There weren't any randy she-goats among them anyway. The garden itself was far more interesting. People had left their clothes just lying around, and for a goat like Gustav, it was an all-you-can-eat buffet. He quickly snatched up an abandoned slipper and a nice wide sweaty leather belt, carefully gnawing around the buckle.
Why does she have this garden anyway?
Argabella asked, blushing fiercely. Milieu looked down his nose at her.
To keep the courtiers out of trouble, obviously.
Judging by what my forefather told me regarding the birds and the bees and the bongos, they're getting up to plenty of trouble,
she stammered.
Only the ones who don't keep up with their cardio,
Fia said with a smirk. All too soon for Gustav's taste and appetite for leather, they were through the garden and walking across snowy white sands toward an isolated sling chair that looked out at the ocean. The beach ahead glittered with pinpoints of reflected light, and Gustav quickly realized that they were gems affixed to the shells of countless crustaceans with menacing pincers. Milieu Goober Snooch spun on his heel and raised a hand to stop them.
Remain here a moment, please. We must take precautions, or...
he said, hooking a thumb over his shoulder.
You'll get crabs.
Stopping was fine with the billy goat. He still had about a third of a belt to gnaw through. Once the butler was satisfied that they all would stay where they were, he turned, cupped his hands around his wee lips, and drew a wheezing breath to call to the beach.
Lady Grinna, your visitors who recently escaped the endless hunger of the olfactory, may we approach?
An extremely pale white woman, hiding underneath a vast bonnet, closed a book and swung out of her sling chair to see who'd come to visit. She wore a red swimming costume and oversized sunglasses that gave her the appearance of insect eyes. She threw her arms wide as if overjoyed to welcome long-lost friends.
Darlings! I was beginning to despair that no one would ever pass the Titan toothpick safely again. Come here, I must meet you. It's perfectly safe.
She dropped her hands and flicked long fingers at the crabs.
Shoo now, pets! Let them approach.
The sparkling guardian sidestepped and cleared a path on the beach, and Grinda looked up, pleased with her trained bodyguards, to grin at the newcomers with brilliant white teeth. Gustav blinked as he finished his succulent stolen belt. He'd expected someone a bit more hag-like in appearance, or at least dressed in black and prone to uncontrollable cackling fits. He'd thought there'd be flying monkeys, or a long-suffering princess in disguise, dressed in rags and singing about her forced servitude with a chorus of forest creatures determined to aid her and provide a winsome descant. Instead, there was a loyal and well-dressed Goober Snooch, who was proud of his service and a cadre of loving crustaceans. Grinda apparently eschewed all the traditional trappings of diabolical witchcraft. Gustav wondered if this was a conscious decision on her part or an accident. He swung his head around to see how the others were taking it.
Fia looked as surprised and uncertain as he felt. The Dark Lord Toby was trying and failing to conceal his occult arousal. Poltro appeared to be dwelling on the manifest horrors of crabs and possibly running a mental comparison with chickens. And Argabella, whoa. For once, the rabbit woman wasn't afraid. She looked ready to break her loot over Grinda's head. The sandwich must have spotted that expression shortly after Gustav did, for her smile melted away into something like shock.
"That's one of my spells," she said, uncertainty in her voice. "Isn't it? From the sleeping castle? What are you doing here? Shouldn't you be guarding your rose?" "My name is Argabella, and I thought I'd come south and get some sun," the bard replied, steel in her tone. "Maybe some answers, too. And I wouldn't say no to a little vengeance. I'm not going to be your scapegoat anymore. Darn that stupid rose!"
Grinda's smile was pitying as she clasped her hands and shook her head sadly.
"Oh, my dear, I can certainly give you sun and answers, and I can only hope to convince you that vengeance isn't warranted. There's so much you don't know. But come here first and introduce me to your friends."
Argabella didn't soften or relax, but she didn't go directly to vengeance either. Gustav got the idea that for all her brief bluster, she was more terrified of the sandwich than she was of most things. Still, she went through with introductions with a certain stiffness in her bunny back, as if she had to use every bit of politesse she possessed to keep from breaking down. When he switched his focus from Argabella to the witch, Gustav realized that something was wrong with Grinda's face. It appeared youthful, but somehow wasn't. As if a waggish rogue had hastily rubbed out the wrinkles but left everything smeared and just slightly off kilter. When she took off the sunglasses, it was even clearer. Those were old, lying eyes. Not because there were crow's feet at the edges of them, there weren't. But there was an utter lack of innocence and wonder, like what he used to see in Worstley's eyes. And she also looked vaguely familiar. When Argabella finished introducing them all, ending with Gustav, the sandwich said,
"You know, my sister used to have a billy goat who looked just like you."
"Yeah, that's because it probably was me," Gustav said. "I think I remember seeing you when I was a kid."
"You're the same goat."
"Yep, I had to leave because your sister had plans to eat me. Hope you're nothing like her in that regard."
Grinda laughed, a light sort of laugh that did a poor job of hiding derision and contempt.
"I'm about as different from my sister as anyone can be. She married beneath her, of course. Girlish rebellion. Thought a farmer with a honeymead habit was a bad boy. And then they lost Bestley, the poor dears. Too handsome for his own good. How's my nephew, Worstley? I worry about him growing up with such backward parents."
"Well, you don't have to worry about him growing up anymore," Gustav said. "So that's good news."
"I beg your pardon." "There's no gentle way to say this,"
Fia interrupted, much to Gustav's relief. "Let the one with muscles tell her what happened."
"I accidentally fell on Worstley from a great height and broke most of his bones."
"What?"
"There are no great heights at my sister's farm. Mostly mud and putrescence, if I remember correctly."
"It wasn't there. I fell from the enchanted tower of the Earl of Borix."
"You know the one?"
Argabella said icily. Grinda's eyes flicked back and forth between Fia and Argabella, trying to process the information.
"But then, what was Worstley doing there? Why would he leave the farm?"
Fia looked down at Gustav, and he understood that it was up to him to explain that bit.
"He was under the impression that he was the chosen one, destined for greatness, but he didn't really know what that meant. He went to the tower because he thought it was the first step to his new destiny, but his second step was getting splattered."
Grinda's eyes bugged out.
"Where on Pell did he get the impression that he was a chosen one?"
This nasty pixie showed up and told him so. Her name was Staff or Stump or something.
Grinda startled.
Staff. Staff the pixie. You're sure?
Yep. One blue sock. Very suspicious.
The sandwich deflated, returned to her sling chair, and sat down with her face in her hands. A glimmering crab-shaped ring on one bony finger caught the light as her jeweled crustaceans skittered around her feet worriedly. She softly spoke something that sounded like a liquid cough.
What was that?
Argabella asked. Grinda moved her hands away and glared back at her.
I said, Luca. Luca is behind this.
When all she got in response was looks of bewilderment, she explained.
He's the chamberlain to King Benedict, and my mortal enemy.
You mean he's a wizard?
Lord Toby asked, perking up a bit.
Yes, one who's been after the throne for many years now. I used to spend most of my time at the capital foiling his plans and convincing the king to treat the peasants well. About 5 years ago, I thought I'd finally checked Lurker for good. I slapped a costly inhibition on his head to prevent him pursuing any plot against the king. I couldn't afford to perform the same inhibition regarding plots against myself, however, so I needed to leave after that, if I wanted to live, because his rage was boundless. This is obviously how he got around it. Convince Staff to anoint a chosen one to upset the established order, and he gets back at me at the same time by telling her to choose my nephew. What did you do with him, by the way?
I laid him in bed next to the sleeping lady in the tower, thinking whatever kept her preserved might work on him too, until we could find you and perhaps revive him.
Fia answered. Oh, Grinda said, looking surprised. That wasn't a bad idea.
Begging your pardon, Lady Sandwich,
Poltro said.
I'd like to make sure I understand. If you revive your nephew somehow, he's going to wind up killing King Benedict because of being the chosen one. Do I have that right?
Grinda blew a raspberry.
I don't think he was the chosen one at all. Getting crushed by a falling woman is not the sort of thing that enchantment would allow to happen. But it does sound like the sort of thing that would happen to my nephew.
Well then, who's the chosen one if it's not him?
Gustav wondered aloud.
It was only the two of us there.
All the human eyes swung around to look at him, and quite a few of the crab eyes on stalks did as well.
You weren't a talking billy goat before Staff arrived, right?
Grinda said. Lord Toby chuckled.
Oh, of course! Now it makes sense!
The truth clicked in Gustav's head. The drunken pixie hadn't used any magic at all on Worstly, but had used plenty on him.
Oh, dang,
he said, and took a few steps back.
Look, y'all, I don't want to kill any kings or upset any natural orders. I'm not cut out for civics. I can eat the heck out of your ugly old sweaters if you want and turn them into neat little brown pellets a few hours later, but managing a kingdom? No way.
Well, Fia said, normally I'd seek a way to hug it out, but it would seem to me that the thing to do is kill this Lurker guy and maybe Staff the Pixie for good measure. That way the Chosen One enchantment dies with her and we have no more shenanigans out of Lurker. I mean, that's assuming that the enchantment dies with the caster.
The sandwich nodded. Yes, darling, that's how it works.
No, no. Wait a second,
Gustav said.
If you take me to the capital where Lurker is, that's going to put me in close proximity to the king, right? And this enchantment is trying to get me to kill him so I'd accidentally poop in his soup or cause his carriage to flip over. This is a bad idea for everybody.
Fia waved away his objections.
It'll be fine, Gustav. We kill Staff first and it'll all work out.
Or I'll accidentally step on the king's necklace and strangle him. No, thank you. I'll stay right here and y'all can go have at it.
Ah, but we need your aura, Grinda explained. Things just seem to happen around chosen ones. Guards turn their heads. Torches go out at convenient times. The right key just so happens to fall out of the right pocket. It'll be tremendously easier to take out Staff if you're with us. You'll definitely need to come along.
Gadzooks!
Gustav's goat lips spluttered and spat as he sighed in frustration.
You stupid humans never listen to me!
Once Gustav had wanted only to eat and poo and make Worstley's life miserable, then he'd wanted to escape the farm boy's mother's stewpot and perhaps see what the world was like outside of his muddy paddock, but now he wasn't exactly sure what he wanted, but he felt like it included not killing the king and plunging the country into war, or whatever happened when people were dying all over the place. When soldiers roamed the land unpaid, the goat figured lots of innocent four-legged animals ended up roasted over fires. He had it. Dang it. Responsibility now. Stupid chosen oneness. Grinda stood up.
Well, that's it, then. If we're going to the capital, I have much to do. We'll leave in the morning and stop at the Goblin Market to pick up some necessities. But you must be tired, my darlings. Relax and enjoy yourselves tonight. Have fun in the Garden of Pellish Delights, if you wish. Miliuguba Snooch will see that you are well taken care of and that you have comfortable rooms. Won't you, Miliu?
Of course, my lady.
Fantastic. Well, then...
Wait!
Argabella's voice cut Grinda's jolly farewell short.
You need to tell me why you did this to me, to the sleeping lady, Hark of Rita, to the whole castle.
Grinda sighed as if the whole thing was simply exhausting, even for people who had previously been swanning about on a private beach with drink-bearing sparkle crabs.
You see, I had to, my dear. It was Lurker working through Staff again. He had a grudge against the Earl of Borix and assigned Staff to lay an enchantment on the Lady Hark of Rita that would have been tremendously embarrassing to the Earl, while, not coincidentally, inconveniencing me.
Argabella, for one, did not seem to buy it.
What sort of enchantment?
An aura of potential, similar to the Chosen One. Except with a nautical focus. The Lady Hark of Rita was destined to become the world's most feared pirate, the Bosun One. Her father would have lost his earldom, and my shipping interests, which are not insignificant, would have suffered greatly. I tried to dispel the enchantment, but failed. So rather than let it work, I set up an itsy-bitsy little plan to put the whole castle to sleep until I could find a solution. That way, no one would suffer.
Argabella was quivering with anger instead of fear this time.
Except for me!
Yes. But I had good reason for that, too, and I'll tell you. If you could just wait one more day...
Her old eyes flicked among the rest of the party.
I think it best we keep that matter between ourselves. So let's talk tomorrow in the Goblin Market, shall we?
Silence fell among them, filled only by the susurrus of the surf, the clicking of crab claws, the palpable tension. Gustav unloaded a pound of pellets on the beach just in case he had to run in the next few seconds.
Fine!
Argabella snapped. They all exhaled the breaths they'd been holding. Angry rabbits are, in fact, quite fearsome, and nobody wanted to see one off the chain.
Sounds like getting rid of Staff will solve a lot of problems,
Fia said.
It will,
Grinda said, nodding and smiling.
Mine too?
Argabella asked. The sandwich's face fell.
We'll talk tomorrow, darling.
Gustav was very glad he wasn't an enchanted rabbit lady just then. 12. At the Goblin Market, glittering with magic and maquillage. The Sand Witch's hospitality was indeed gracious and boundless, at least according to Toby. He had originally intended to use his time to snoop through the castle, find Grinda's inner sanctum, and plunder her grimoires and potions for a magical object that would allow his full powers to blossom. But the goober snooch possessed an aggravating ability to show up any time Toby found himself alone in a promising sort of hall, and there were so many invigorating activities listed on an agenda swirled with the most beautiful calligraphy that he never got around to a proper ransacking. He instead found himself some hours later enjoying a vast banquet that could have filled even Olfactory's capacious gut. The courtiers of the feast were witty and clever and seemed fascinated with Toby, a lord in his own right.
"Boric sounds just precious," they cooed.
"Do tell us about your rampant power."
In between fragrant nibbles of gourmet cheeses, goblet after goblet of fine wine and mead, and the batted eyelashes of two young duchesses with a dozing chaperone, Toby all but forgot his original plan. When the duchess on the left mentioned that the Garden of Pellish Delights was lit beautifully at night by swans, outfitted with softly glowing lantern hats, he couldn't think of a single reason not to join her on the lawn.
"For research," he told himself,
as she led him outside, complimenting the tender down of his beard. He realized he'd forgotten all about his traveling companions and hadn't seen them in hours. The next morning, Toby woke up nude and halfway tumbled into a topiary shaped like a giraffe. He was missing one sock, and his mouth tasted like he'd licked a swamp ferret. As he looked around, trying to remember the last 12 hours, he saw no sign of the naughty duchesses, or of Gustav, thank goodness. Chosen ones tended to get in the way of dastardly deeds, even by accident. The Dark Lord hurried inside, clutching an irate swan over his front bum, only to find Milieu, somehow still awake and in perfect form, ready to return him to his well-appointed room. There Toby gladly dumped the swan out the window and availed himself of a wardrobe filled with wizardly garments in just his size and a bureau full of warm woolen socks and pointy hats. The exact moment that he completed his toilette, noting with alarm that several of his beard hairs were missing, a knock sounded on his door. The Dark Lord smoothed down his eyebrows, checked the mirror, and tried to look urbane. Should yet another acrobatic duchess be standing in the hall with intriguing promises about swans? Alas, all he found was his party. Fia, for once, looked relaxed and cheerful, possibly owing to the new breastplate and greaves that complemented her chainmail bikini. Although he did find it peculiar that the beautifully molded metal featured a very wide window of cleavage right over her heart, which seemed like a major design flaw for a warrior. Poltro looked sleepy and well-fed, and Toby had a vague memory of seeing her in the gardens the previous night, yelling at swans and accusing them of being vanilla geese. Gustav looked about the same as ever, although he had leather shoelaces dangling from his lips and almost seemed to be smiling. Argabella, however, looked like she hadn't slept a bit, and had instead paced her room all night without pause, quivering in that way that she had.
"It's good that you've come to me," he began. "As a wise and powerful wizard, I—"
"Time to go,"
Argabella said, interrupting him.
"Now, please."
"I wasn't done."
"We don't care," Gustav slurped down his shoelace. "Grinda's ready to take us to the Goblin Market, and I hear they have some really disgusting edibles there, so let's get on with it."
"Disgusting? No, no, no," Toby scoffed. "My dear goat, the Goblin Market is one of those oxymoronic misnomers where you expect it to be revolting, but it's actually magical and wonderful. You can't have a horrible name and horrible wares and expect anyone to come. The goblins, though a strange people, are marvelous makers."
"Are you sure?"
Poltro asked.
"Because I met a goblin once, and I still feel like I can't wash my hands enough because it was a bit sticky, I must say."
"Positive," Toby smiled patronizingly. "My dear children, many wonders await you."
But have you ever been there?
Fia pressed.
Well, no,
Toby admitted.
But wizards talk.
What are the wizards if you talk to?
This again from Paltrow, from whom he would have expected more loyalty.
Because as I grew up in your general farmyard area and watched very few folk come and go from your doorstep, I don't recall seeing anyone properly mysterious or uncanny, besides the postman and yourself, of course, my dark lord, sir.
At his wit's end, Toby waggled his fingers at the ceiling and ducked a falling pan au chocolat.
We wizards are an epistolary people.
Cool,
Paltrow said.
Sorry to hear that. Hope the doctor can help.
Toby shook his head sadly.
Let me pack my bags, and soon you will all see.
Then under his breath, honestly, the state of education in Pelletay.
But you taught me everything I know, sir.
Toby disappeared into his room, shutting the door in Paltrow's face. It wasn't true, of course. He'd been the one responsible for neglecting her education, then later tried to make it right by sending her to Cutter, which had clearly been a mistake. What the lower classes didn't understand about Dark Lords was that their concerns were part of a larger sort of sphere. One couldn't get any magic done or make a mint off hedgehog hybrids if one was thinking about educating the young or healing the old. The nice thing about the top of Toby's tower was that he didn't generally have to see everything happening on the ground, especially if he left off his spectacles. And that was the point of being wise and having untold knowledge. You knew well enough when to leave things alone. And you also knew well enough when to become deeply involved, as was Toby's current role. For all that he didn't like Grinda as a person, he knew that the keys to her power were hidden somewhere in this palace, or on her person. A wand, a secret beard, someone's unbeating heart. It was nearby, and if Grinda would just stay occupied with the journey, he could find it and, well, steal was such a dirty word.
Share. Borrow her powers. Siphon off a little.
If he was clever enough, she wouldn't even notice. Although Paltrow was correct that Toby had never actually left his tower, he had done quite a bit of reading and was anxious to build his knowledge as he slowly began to consolidate occult power. He knew that several Dark Lords nurtured plans to take over the world, but that sounded like a colossal bother. A turtle hog empire and unfettered access to fine cheeses? That was Toby's dark desire. When he reemerged in the hall, nothing had changed except that Gustav had begun to nibble on the edge of a tapestry, and Argabella was somehow even more anxious. The rabbit woman couldn't stop shaking, and her already buggy eyes were wide and twitching frantically. Toby worried that if she were to see a hawk outside, she'd stamp and start digging a hole. But Grinda had promised to reveal the truth of Argabella's transformation today, hadn't she? Toby needed to stay close in hopes that he might learn some nifty magic. Not that he wanted to turn anyone into half a rabbit, but it would be nice to know that he could, if he needed to. Milieu appeared in that silent, sneaky, disapproving way that he had and led them down several labyrinthine halls, depositing them in the foyer.
My Lady Grinda will meet you shortly,
he said.
Please do refrain from masticating the draperies.
Paltrow grimaced.
Oh, gross.
If you don't want people to eat things, you shouldn't hang them at mouth level,
Gustav grumbled. Apparently, the halfling butler's idea of shortly didn't strictly agree with the dictionary's definition. After 15 very uncomfortable minutes in the elegant but smallish vestibule, Toby could no longer make polite humming noises every time he accidentally made eye contact with someone.
So, how was everyone's night?
He asked, supposing that if he was going to be uncomfortable, they should very well do the polite thing and join him.
Lovely,
Paltrow piped up.
Fine picnic among a stealthy pot of rogues in a shadowy bit of garden. No chickens or crabs, plenty of cloaks, masks, and whispering. Played an excellent game of hide and goose, although the geese weren't really fond of it.
Paltrow, those were swans.
A honk is a honk, my lord. And my what honkers.
How about you, Fia? Good night? Fia breathed in a sigh of happiness.
Milieu took me to a rough stone hall in the keep, where the warriors meet to heft tankards of sturdy ale. They also had a lovely Chenin Blanc, excellent nose, with an oaky afterbirth and light tonguing of pear and peach. I played the best game of dice in my life, and won this beautiful armor from the blacksmith himself. Feels so good to get some coverage.
She exhaled, and Toby had trouble not ogling as the chest plate was mirror bright, with elegant curlicues pointing right at the giant cleft exposed by the armor's unsafe and unnecessary window.
Finished up with marble tofu soufflé, fried okra blossoms with debauched guava au jus, and some arm wrestling.
She tapped her new greaves.
Which I won.
And I was led out to a barnyard filled with goats, cows, sheep, and a very arrogant alpaca,
Gustav said.
Since you were about to ask, I'm sure.
Could any of them talk?
Toby asked. Gustav shook his head, and little bits of hay flew out.
No, thank goodness. Can you imagine anything more boring than listening to an alpaca talk? Oh, I'm just so tall and floofy, and everyone loves me. Look at my long neck and freaky teeth. Alpaca this, alpaca that. Disgusting.
So, what did you do?
Gustav gave a caprine shrug.
Ate some trash, peed on things, ejected pellets in areas bereft of pellets. Found a poo boy and harangued him, but he just took the abuse stoically. This Grinda trains her servants well. Oh, and Moxie and Doxie won't want to ever leave here, I don't think. She has dwarvish cattle masseuses from Oftpumpf, and they gave our old oxen a prod and tickle they won't soon forget.
That's fine. I don't imagine we'll need them from here on. And how is your night, Argabella?
In response, the rabbit woman wailed and yanked down a tapestry before kicking it with a fluffy foot.
Wretched! It was wretched! That awful butler dumped me in a room with perfect acoustics and a wide variety of lutes, harpsichords, sousaphones, and baudrons. There was a lovely lectern with a stack of creamy paper already scored with music staffs and a variety of quills and erasable inks. Magical windows showed scenes of great inspiration. And a giant book called Ye Olde Rhyme Zone sat waiting. And I had bard's block. I couldn't even get one line of a song. So I smashed a few lutes and went outside to get drunk, but all I could find were massive amounts of freshly pressed vegetable juices. It was torture. Torture, I say. That nasty woman wants nothing more than to see me suffer.
This was the most the rabbit girl had ever said, as well as the most emotion she'd shown. When she dissolved in hiccuping sobs, spouting tears that matted down her already patchy face fur, Fia gathered her up into an awkward hug, and Toby was spared the dangerous responsibility of saying something sympathetic like, "Oh?" or, "You poor dear," or, "How terrible of that monster to give you everything you should require to be happy." Just then the front door was opened again by Milieu, and Toby began to wonder if perhaps the Cask, Snooper, Goober, Snitches were a very large clan of identical spy clones. A grand carriage waited outside, and Milieu unfolded a tidy set of steps and held out his hand to help their party aboard. Toby couldn't help noticing that the carriage wasn't shaped like a pumpkin, which is currently all the rage among the witchy elite. No, Grinda's carriage was shaped like an octopus. Four of the arms curling to hold the wheels, two arcing toward the team of six dappled gray horses, and two twisting to support the liveried dwarf guards positioned around back and bristling with weapons. Fia was the first to accept Milieu's aid into the carriage, and Toby noted her hand on her shears as she stepped within, giving him a competent nod. Next came Poltro, who somehow managed to trip on a rogue crab. Then Gustav, who raised an eyebrow at Milieu and leapt in without help. Argabella looked at Toby, and Toby looked at Argabella, for they were the last two people not inside the wheeled cephalopod.
"Is it foolish that I'm scared?"
she asked him.
"Everyone's scared all the time," he responded. "But that's no reason not to keep on."
The rabbit girl gave him a real smile.
Thanks, Toby. I knew I could count on you.
Toby looked down, annoyed.
Don't go counting on me. Dark lords can't be trusted.
Argabella punched him gently on the shoulder.
I told you. I always saw you as more crepuscular than dark.
With that, she hopped into the carriage and Toby followed her. Inside, all was sumptuous and oddly shaped. The carriage was upholstered in aubergine velvet with lilac spots and billowing silky curtains. Grinda the Sandwich sat on her own cushy bench, smiling and gracious and utterly dressed to the nines in a matching traveling costume of every shade of violet. Her hat, although very wide and chic, held the telltale point that let anyone know she was a witch, and a very wealthy one indeed. Unlike wizards, who boasted of the height and sturdiness of their towers, witches prided themselves on exhibiting only the perkiest cones. Grinda knocked on the roof of the carriage, which creaked into motion.
"I trust you all had a marvelous night," she asked, the height of fashion and grace.
"Delightful,"
Toby said, settling indirectly across from her to establish his dominance. Grinda leaned back and crossed her legs, which Toby immediately mirrored.
"I hear you enjoyed yourself in the Garden of Pellish Delights. Did you find my illusion satisfactory?"
Toby swallowed hard.
"Illusions?"
"Those twin duchesses,"
Grinda laughed, throwing back her head gaily.
"They were too perfect, were they not?" "Too perfect,"
he mumbled, racking his memory. What had their names been, and what exactly had they looked like? Blonde, perhaps? Definitely in possession of hair. Also legs. Maybe? His memory was shifty, shadowy, unclear.
"Not bad for sand golems, I hope. One of my little pet projects."
Toby felt the color drain from his face. At least he understood now why his morning bath had been full of sand.
"And the food was a treat."
"Ah, that was real."
Grinda's grin gleamed like a tiger's smile.
"And now that you've ingested my bloodhound blood pudding pinwheels, I'll always know where you are. Magic is wonderful, don't you think?"
"Wonderful."
Toby decided to be quiet for a while, and immediately stopped aping her behavior, as it appeared to give him no strategic advantage.
"And the rest of you, were your lodgings satisfactory?"
"Fantastic," Fia said. "Rather pleasant, if I do say so myself, even if a bit sandy, which one must expect at the beach, considering the beach is made of sand,"
Paltrow said with a grin.
"Functional,"
Gustav said.
"Could have done with more boots."
"Merely functional, we can't have that."
Grinda withdrew a crystal wand from her cleavage, waved it, and shouted,
"Brigand Skokas!"
An aged chuckaboot appeared in a puff of sand and fell to the floor of the carriage right in front of Gustav. He nudged it with his nose and cocked his head on the side.
"Doeskin? Worn for about a year? Possibly lost in the swamp, considering the slightly peaty odor?"
He licked it and gave a baa of delight.
"I take it back. You are truly the hostess with the mostess on this coastess."
For a few moments, the only noises in the carriage were Grinda's teeth creaking in a pleased smile, and Gustav nibbling the boot with little moans of caprine ecstasy. To Toby's great disappointment, the wand had disappeared. He pulled a small notebook from one of the many pockets in his cloak and began scribbling. That shoe spell could come in handy sometime, and he would now train his focus entirely on Grinda's cleavage with the aim of getting his hands on that crystal wand.
"Ah,"
the sandwich said, tapping her face.
"Eyes up here, mister."
As the carriage rumbled along and Grinda made flawless small talk and repeatedly reminded him not to stare hungrily at her blouse, Toby let his gaze wander to Argabella. The rabbit woman was sitting as far away from the sandwich as possible and looked terribly uncomfortable, even more twitchy than usual. She tried several times to question Grinda, but the witch inevitably sidestepped the inquiries with her conversational legerdemain, leaving Argabella stuttering on the edge of a faux pas. With each mile, the rabbit girl looked more disgusted and queasy. When the carriage finally jolted to a stop, Argabella lurched forward with a gasp, upchucking a generous amount of carrot juice directly into Grinda's violet-wrapped lap.
"She gets travel-sick,"
Fia said, helping Argabella stand and all but carrying her out of the door Milieu had just thrown open.
"Indeed," Grinda said through gritted teeth. "Destrugere vamati!"
One wave of the crystal wand in her lap was again clean. It was at that precise moment, the moment of miraculous vomit banishment, that Toby realized he had never wanted anything as much as he wanted to steal her wand. It was a need, really. Perhaps he was going about it the wrong way, staring too obviously. But Grinda cut such a dashing figure that it was hard to look away, even when one didn't want to reach down her shirt and steal the key to her power. Statuesque and lithe, she was the most radiant thing in the immediate vicinity, which included a scrubby field and a few rotting stumps. Toby straightened his robes and tried to look replete with arcane knowledge, and calculate how much those dwarvish guards must cost Grinda to keep on staff. Such fighters were not cheap. He was growing insecure about the size of his tower.
"If you need to pass gas, I'd go over there," Gustav whispered. "Near the horses. They don't mind."
"I do not need to do any such thing," Toby snapped.
"Well, then you might want to move the parts of your face around so you don't look pained and constipated. Not a good look for humans, from what I've noticed."
Toby shook his head and put on a wise sort of smirk that wizards use to remind everyone how clever they were.
"Oh, no. It got worse. Tell me what you ate," Gustav said. "So I won't eat it."
On the verge of the sort of rage that incited rain showers of garlic naan, Toby headed over to Argabella and Fia instead. Considering the look of nausea on Argabella's face, no one would ask him about the idiosyncrasies of his own facial expressions.
"What's she doing?"
Argabella asked.
"And where is this goblin market?"
Grinda was walking to and fro, peeking her head around as if she were trying to avoid angry hornets, or possibly trying a new dance move that wasn't going to catch on. Toby didn't actually know what the sandwich was doing. That annoyed him, so he indulged in some self-soothing in the form of sharing his hard-won wisdom.
"Goblin markets only show up at dusk on a full moon, when their mysteries might remain hidden from the stark light of day,"
he explained grandly.
"Wrong," Grinda said.
"Here it is."
She grabbed a bit of air and pulled it back to reveal a completely other place. It was as if she'd found a door in nothing and opened it to reveal something. Toby was painfully reminded of the elves' magic in Morningwood, which had likewise left him feeling unmoored and unmanned.
"Step right in," Grinda urged them. "I can't hold this all day."
Over by the carriage, something grunted, causing the dwarvish guards to bellow bravely and draw their swords. Argabella's foot stamped repeatedly before she could stop herself. Gustav ejected caution pellets, and even Toby felt his beard hairs curl protectively upward.
"Go on now,"
Grinda said.
"Hurry!"
Gustav trotted in, followed by Argabella, still with Fia's arm around her. Poltro slunk in, as rogues do, while Toby waited to be last.
"After you,"
he said.
"No, no,"
Grinda warbled.
"After you.
A gentleman never lets a lady go last."
"Unless you know how to fold time, you'd best hurry in."
She chucked her chin toward the commotion behind the carriage.
"This clearing is guarded by a troll with very bad anger issues, and my guards can only detain him so long."
Toby had not yet met a troll, and although he had hoped they were jolly people with brightly colored hair, the fact that Grinda didn't want to meet one suggested that Toby really didn't want to meet one.
"If you insist," he said,
hurrying through the hole in the middle of nothing. Stepping through was much like stepping through a door in the same way that falling face first into a tar pit is like swimming. The air was thick with strange smells and raucous noises, none of them good. Toby's party clustered together like scared baby ducks until Grinda urged them on.
"Hurry, hurry,"
she clucked. "Haven't got all week." As they walked, Grinda talked with equal briskness. The Goblin Market is the finest way to shop, provided you touch nothing, talk to no one, and under no circumstances accept gifts from strangers. She slapped Poltro's hand as the rogue attempted to snatch an unrealistically flawless peach from a pile of likewise unrealistically flawless peaches. Also, no stealing. They'll cut off your pinky finger.
It's not so bad, Poltro said.
But they throw away everything that isn't the finger.
Poltro gulped.
Point taken.
As they walked, Toby was amazed, but mostly at how wrong he'd been about goblin markets. It wasn't an outdoor collection of colorful stalls and wagons lit by glowing lanterns and helmed by friendly sprites. No, it was all indoors. Two grim and stodgy stories of connected shops helmed by hideous and annoying goblins. The architecture was dull and unimaginative, and the goblins themselves were likewise a disappointment. No wings, no glitter, no smiles, just twisted creatures like gray hairless monkeys, most of whom wanted to sell them magical hair curlers and high-priced bedsheets. Several of them followed the group, demanding that they take various surveys.
No, thank you.
Argabella kept saying, which only seemed to make the goblins more passionate in their hectoring.
Just ignore them, Grinda said.
But that's rude.
You can't out-rude rude people. Now ignore them and keep up before they catch you with those curlers. Your nose hairs will never be the same.
They passed shop after shop, all of which looked fascinating and also slightly predatory. Finally, Grinda led them into a storefront with the words Glamour Shots scrawled over the door in what looked like fresh blood. A wizened goblin in a vibrant orange wig met them just inside.
My Lady Grinda, what a pleasure,
the goblin said, although it sounded somewhat like she was gargling.
Are you here for another injection of...
No, my dear... Grinda interrupted. My friends and I are traveling to Songlin, capital city of Pell, and they must look the part. Hair, makeup, wardrobe, toenails, and whatever a goat needs. Put it on my tab.
The goblin bowed low, her wig falling off and forgotten.
As you wish, my lady.
Rising back up, the goblin clapped her hands, and out ran at least 30 more goblins, all clad in aprons and carrying pincushions, and yet more of the dastardly hair curlers. Soon, Toby found himself sitting in a chair being attended to by 5 goblins. One buffed his nails, one trimmed his eyebrows and nose hairs, and one styled his hair into the tangled curly mass that was currently so au courant for the wizardly set. He was most pleased with the beard extensions, and as a goblin painstakingly attached artificial hairs to his chin, he looked around for his friends. Fia barely fit in the chair and seemed deeply uncomfortable with the way the goblins were waxing off her excess hair and oiling her muscles. Poltro was rocking a smoky eye and looked deeply suspicious in the all-black costume the goblins had practically sewn her into. Her last outfit, once Toby's pride and joy, had been rendered filthy by repeated tussles with farm animals and tussocks of grass. Not to mention a marination of lemon juice and giant mucus. Gustav had been unceremoniously dumped into a large copper tub and scrubbed within an inch of his life, and he was now standing on a small pedestal, surrounded by rage pellets, while a trio of goblins curled his silky black fur. He was hating every minute of it, and it was all Toby could do not to burst out laughing. Poor Argabella, however, looked sodden and miserable. Her fur had been washed and fluffed, but no matter what the frantic goblins did, it fell right back down, limp and scraggly. Her ears flopped down to frame her face, and her watery eyes rejected every attempt at cosmetics, as if the manufacturers had simply not bothered to test their products on animals. Sitting in the chair, quaking, she looked like she was in her own personal rainstorm. And perhaps she was, emotionally. Her eyes couldn't rest on one spot, and Toby had to assume she was hunting for Grinda, who had disappeared in all the hubbub.
Crunch break,
the head goblin called.
Best get out before the store closes.
Well, what?
Poltro asked.
Or you get crunched.
Thanking them profusely and spraying them with clouds of putrid perfume, the goblins finally bowed the group out of their shop. As soon as they stepped back into the dreary stone of the market, Grinda appeared, eating a large pretzel. The lines on her face, if possible, were even more blurry. When she chewed, it looked like melting taffy smeared with lipstick. There were limits, Toby realized, to what magic could do.
You all look fabulous, she enthused. Now, supplies. We'll be going to Nordstrom's, one of the biggest shops in the entire market. As such, it's of vast importance that you stay close to me.
But, Grinda,
the witch kept talking, ignoring Argabella completely. As I'm a long-time customer, the goblins wouldn't dare defy me, but as mere visitors, your treatment may be more...
disappointing?
Transformative, if you're not careful. So again, touch nothing, take nothing, and most especially, lick nothing. She pointed at Gustav with a perfect purple nail. The goat slurped down the last of the silk ribbon the goblins had tied around his neck.
Who, me?
He said, then burped. Now come along. Before Argabella could push her with further questioning, Grinda swept majestically down the thoroughfare, leaving the party jogging to keep up with her expansive stride. Toby was the last of them, hanging back to take a closer look at the shops along the way, many of which he longed to enter. He saw a shop of nothing but candles, then one of hats, then one of candles poured into hats, and then came Master Hornswoggle's Cheese Emporium, oh, which passed by all too quickly. But every now and then, something would make him do a double take, and he felt certain his eyes were playing tricks on him. In one shop, the mannequins were momentarily screaming human children, and the next moment they were simply forms of carved wood sporting brightly colored lederhosen. In another shop, a selection of shirts were scrawled with phrases like, "Death to all humans," and "My other carriage is a hearse, full of your bones," and "I dare you to lick me." Yet another shop blared horrible music, and as Toby glanced inside, he briefly saw an exhausted woman in a ragged red dress and broken shoes dancing like a puppet on strings. He blinked once, and he recognized it as a billowing red curtain behind a display of crystal slippers.
Toby!
A hand on his shoulder pulled him backward. He'd nearly stepped into the store with the crystal slippers, but Fia had yanked him back out.
You're into women's shoes?
She asked.
I thought that curtain might go nicely in my banquet hall.
He offered blithely.
What curtain?
Because, oddly, the red curtain was gone. Three goblins stared at him with two bright eyes, among the horrible t-shirts and racks of terrible mugs as he backed out of the doorway and hurried with Fia to catch up with their party. Nordstrom's loomed ahead, looking about as inviting as a cemetery at midnight. The rusted metal gate slowly creaked up as a goblin in a spiked helmet awaited them.
Who goes there?
Grinda held out a card, which the goblin inspected.
And these people are your guests, my lady.
They are.
They know the rules.
Grinda glared a warning at them, hands on hips. They do.
Then welcome to Nordstrom's. Might I add we're having a splendid sale on Sultan's pillows, main floor. Just take the stairs on your right.
Once inside, Toby was taken aback by the hugeness of the shop. It seemed to go on forever in all directions, a sea of clothes ranging from tiny sprite sizes up to robes for giants roughly the size of Olfactory. A pair of men's underpants, big enough to use as a shelter for the entire group, hung from a clothes hanger like a trapeze, promising exciting new Y-front technology. Something caught Toby's eye, and he stopped in place. "Wizards only," a sign read. Right over an enticing sort of heavy curtain festooned with silver moons and stars. Toby watched his group following Grinda toward a display of rucksacks before turning to investigate. He had always considered himself to have the potential of a powerful wizard, and he had never before had the opportunity to shop a selection of items curated just for his needs. Perhaps he could procure a crystal wand like Grinda's, or secure a beard spell that would make his extensions permanent and thereby boost his powers. In any case, there was no harm in perusing the goods. With a smirk, he ducked through the curtains, appreciating the wizardly scent of sage and patchouli indelibly drenching the fabric. Once inside, he waited for his eyes to adjust. But they didn't. The room was pitch black. Toby fumbled against the wall for a light switch, then, finding none, fumbled for the curtains. They were gone. The wall was, too. Goblin laughter echoed through the chamber. When Toby tried to take a step, he found heavy manacles around both of his feet.
"What is this farce?"
he cried.
"Touched the velvet curtain, didn't you?"
a sullen voice said in the dark,